Mini episode 1030 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1030. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here, and we have a great guest with us here today, a gentleman that we've had on a number of times in the past, primarily to talk about issues regarding the federal debt, federal finances, and we'll be doing that in a subsequent segment. But here, right now, we are having a conversation with this gentleman on the subject of the late, great Senator John McCain, someone with whom he served in the Congress and grew to be close to their shared interest of a number of different issues, and somebody that has a great appreciation for him and was a supporter of his 2000 presidential campaign in 2008 as well. I speak, of course, of the great Joe DiGuardi, one-time U.S. congressman from Greater New York, a gentleman who may very well go down, given the demographics of that area, of being the last Republican ever to serve in that district. And it was tough to do when you got elected
right.
There.
You know, when I was in Congress, we had 34 members of Congress from New York, 17 Republicans and 17 Democrats. We're now down to 27, but I think maybe 7 Republicans. So you can see how the power is shifting to California, Texas, and Florida.
Very much so, and I'll tell you what, I should never fail to mention this when I have you on, because it is noteworthy. I think one of the large figures in the second half of the American century here, of the 20th century, legendary feminist Bella Abzug, making a comeback to Congress here, but you stopped her in 1986, so that's quite a very, very big pelt that you have there. As far as a defeated foe. So a formidable member of Congress when you were in there for your time, and of course you got to know another young maverick by the name of John McCain at that time.
Yes, I did. Well, that was a challenging race because, you know, she was pretty bright and articulate, and thank God she decided to take off the hat. That would have been distracting for me, but that also was a problem because my communications guy that I paid a lot of money for almost didn't hire me because he said, he let me hire him because he said, you know, I can't afford to lose a race. His name was Roger Ailes.
Uh-huh.
I paid him for 4 years. He says, Joe, you know, she took off the hat. She looks like anybody's grandmother. You're a conservative Republican in the eyes of most people. They don't know how good you are, you know, as a moderate in many ways. And this is now going to be dangerous. You got to be careful here. You can't look mean. You better have a smile every time you debate her and give her as many debates as she wants because she's got a lot of negatives. And we won.
Yeah, you did. You showed your skill in that race and your ability to persevere through a race like that. And again, a lot of similarities to your friend John McCain, who had some difficult races over a period of time. And he won some and he lost some. But I know you were with him there through his presidential campaigns. You shared a lot of the same interests and issues. And, again, who better to talk to you about John McCain than somebody like you, Joe, somebody who really got to appreciate him up close?
Well, there's a lot you can say about John McCain, but he certainly was a person to reckon with, whether it was in politics or in anything else, because he had a strong mind about what he believed, and he was very honest. You know, I don't think you could have found a more honest person than John McCain. You could, I'm sure. He made his mistakes here and there. But on balance, he developed a lot of trust with the people. And you could see it just by the ceremony that was held at the National Cathedral. The people who came to have, on the one hand, Barack Obama, and the other, George W. Bush, it says a lot. And there was Clinton also there. So he had a lot of people respecting him for who he was, a person who worked very hard, a person who believed in so many good things, and who just felt, you know, that he, America, was great all the time and will be great all the time.
Uh-huh.
That came out during the speech by his daughter as well, Megan.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, too, the ceremony that was in Arizona prior to that, because there were a number of different tributes that took place there, but the ceremony in Arizona, I don't know if you got a chance to catch this part, but legendary Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald, one of the great eulogies I've ever seen, and managed to be both funny and touching and really kind of hit all the notes. Did you get a chance to catch that? Because I was really impressed.
Yeah, I saw it on TV, obviously. I wouldn't get down there, but I was invited by the family to the ceremony. I just couldn't get there because I had just returned from Italy, where we did a documentary on the history of Albanians in Italy. And I just couldn't turn around in one day, and so I basically saw it on TV, but I didn't miss one minute of that 4 or 5 hour ceremony at the National Cathedral. It was just amazing.
It was really remarkable, and again, that's great that you got an invitation, because there was plenty of stuff in the media, and I'm not going to dwell on this, but a number of people who were associated with him over a period of time, some quite prominently, who did not get the invitation. So that shows, obviously, the regard that they had for you. And I know you mentioned to me off air how instrumental he was, because you have been such a great activist on behalf of the Albanian people and Albanian Americans, and what he was able to do to help try to prevent genocide back in the 90s. I know that's very significant to you.
Well, everybody remembers Srebrenica, I think, 1995. That was the Bosnian element of the Balkan Wars. And don't forget, this guy Milosevic was a hardcore ultranationalist communist and started the wars in 1990 in Slovenia, then went to Croatia in 92, Bosnia in 93. That's when you had this horrific incident in Srebrenica. And then he was on his way to Kosovo, and that's when I needed all the help I could get from Democrats and Republicans, because I had already established myself as a voice for the Albanian people in the Balkans, and McCain was there at every step of the way, but so was Democrats like Congressman Tom Lantos, the only American Jew saved from the Holocaust. He was the co-chairman of the Congressional Human Rights Caucus, and I worked with him on Soviet Jewry. This is back in 1985-86, Tibet, and what was the other one? Yeah, I even had to go against my own president, Ronald Reagan, on South Africa, because I was for the sanctions, and Ronald Reagan was not. So I was kind of a maverick, even though I was a so-called conservative Republican that many people thought got elected in 84 on the coattails of Ronald Reagan. That may have helped, but believe me, Roger Ailes and my energy were a powerful combination in overcoming a three-point-something advantage that the Democrats had. I meant in registration, a 3.5 to one Republican. And people said, Joe, you can't win. That's an impossible district for a Republican. But there was no other way I could do it, because the party was not about to give me any nomination. So I had to get into it. And then, thank God, divine providence interceded, and a billionaire who was in the seat for 14 years, Dick Ottinger, retired. And I then had an open seat, but attracted so much competition, seven Republicans, three conservatives, had to wait for the winner of a four-way Democratic primary, and succeeded on Election Day by about 1,000 votes, would you believe it, out of 300,000.
That is amazing. That's really amazing, Joe. And I'll tell you what, you know, you mentioned Reagan, and it's one of these things where there's been different sides sort of claiming him in the time since then, and particularly when you look at foreign policy. For somebody like me, who's a real Rand Paul kind of a guy, I look at the Reagan part of realism, which I think was really underrated when he was president. We were not really involved in any hot shooting wars ourselves. There were proxy wars. Somebody like John McCain represented, I think, the more bellicose strain of the Reagan era here. So I admit that, again, while I respect him as a great American hero, I certainly have my differences with him on foreign policy. But I will say this, if we look at an alternate history of 2000 where McCain comes through the primaries, I don't think McCain has to go to the nail biter in the state of Florida to beat Al Gore. I think he was more popular in the general population, not within the party, or at least the party apparatchiks, but he was more popular, I think, in the country than was George W. Bush. And I look at this, and I look at how our financial situation, which I know that's a pet cause of yours, how I think it would be different and better today had he won that, because his criticisms of the Bush tax cuts and the fact that they really weren't paid for and everything like that, I don't know that McCain would have necessarily had much more spending restraint than George W. Bush. Maybe he would have, hopefully. But the way that the tax cuts basically turned around the financial situation, how we went from surplus to deficit, I get a sense that wouldn't have happened under John McCain.
Well, you know, you got to see different sides of John as I saw them. And by the way, I got to know his wife, Cindy, very well. And, you know, she runs the McCain Institute. I was at their annual dinner, invited with my wife at the St. Regis Hotel last year. You know, John, one of the things that appealed to me about McCain was that he was for a strong defense. And don't forget, he became chairman of the Armed Services Committee. But what he liked about me was that I wanted a strong defense, but I didn't want a spendthrift defense.
Right.
In fact, I went to the Reagan National Defense Forum, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, in Simi Valley. It was in the Reagan Library. And there you would find 500-plus lobbyists of the defense industry, the generals and whatnot, and I used that as an opportunity, and McCain was there, to wait my turn, and I had to get up like 15 minutes early and hold that mic because only two of us were asked allowed to ask a question, and he just loved what I said because I told the chairwoman of the whole issue there, she was the Secretary of the Air Force, I said, Madam Secretary, you have two problems. One is the budget problem, because, you know, to squeeze out more money for defense, it's going to have to come out of other discretionary things. We don't have reform reform on entitlement, and we don't have, you know, interest rates coming down, they're going up. And so you got a budget problem, but you also have a public relations problem, because you want more money, but the Defense Department hasn't been able to give the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, a statement it could audit until today. And by the way, that was my bill that was passed in 1990, the Chief Financial Officer Act, that imposed the mandate that every government agency and department had to deliver statements that could be audited until today. The very last one just came out a couple of months ago. The Defense Department is so big, and there are so many material weaknesses in its ability to account, it can't be an audit of the entire government. Would you believe that the GAO, they give a disclaimer? So I got up and gave that. In fact, I'm going to send you, because I had someone capture it on audio tape, I'm going to send you, and if you ever play this segment, I'd like you to play 2 minutes of it, and you'll see how I took on the defense establishment. And I'm someone who believes in a strong defense like John McCain, but he praised me for doing that. He says, Joe, a lot of money is being wasted by the defense, and I've been on their back all the time about it. You know, stick with it, and that's what I did.
You know what, Joe? I tell you what, I look forward to getting that from you. And again, you just gave me even more regard for Senator John McCain, because I was not, I knew he was obviously in favor of bigger defense spending, and I guess like a lot of people, I tend to generalize when I hear that, but to know that he approved of your efforts to stand up to the military-industrial complex, that gives me even more regard for John McCain, that he could appreciate that as well. A great American.
Not only did he approve it, he put me in touch with his staff person in charge of this issue, financial management, on the Armed Services Committee, and I dealt directly with him, and he allowed me to go over some concepts with him before he went over them with McCain. Don't forget, it was McCain that decided that we're not going to spend $25 billion on air tankers to refuel the planes in the sky because the government decided it wanted a lease, and that lease would have cost $5 billion more just for the interest, and he turned it down. So that's an example of how good he was in looking at saving money on defense, but he always wanted a bigger budget for defense because he knew how important it was.
Well, that's good. And again, and that's a thing that I can really appreciate. If he was in favor of fiscal restraint while he was doing it, then again, that's something that I guess I probably hadn't given proper appreciation to. And it's good to know that about him. And it's good to have you on to be able to talk about your friend, a great American, Senator John McCain. May he rest in peace. A great hero, a man who really suffered for this country and came back and gave us a lot of public service. Thank you for being on today to talk about him, Joe. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1030. But before we close, Joe, please give us some thoughts on John McCain's final statement to the American people.
Basically, when John McCain succumbed to his illness in August 2018, his passing was mourned, and his character and patriotism were praised across the political spectrum. In a farewell message that he left to be shared after his death, he wrote, and I'm just going to about patriotism with tribal rivalries that have sown resentment and hatred and violence in all the corners of the globe. We weaken it when we hide behind walls rather than tear them down, when we doubt the power of our ideals rather than trust them to be the great force for change they've always been. Not despair of our present difficulties, McCain said, but believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.